Before we disperse to enjoy afternoon tea, we have invited Tom McAnulty to say a few words to us, not as an official speaker, but as a friend of Winchester Talking Newspaper. Now, I'll give you a few words a little about Tom. He'll be embarrassed when I read all this. I know. For the Macula Society, he joined on the 6th of May 2008 and retired on the 30th of September 2020. He managed 50 of the network of 300 Macula Society support groups for visually impaired people in the UK. He also managed around 260 volunteers who are befrienders, buddies, skills for seeing, speakers, tech talk, and in Berkshire, Buckinghamshire, Channel Islands, Gloucestershire, Hampshire, Oxfordshire, and Wiltshire.
Not much, like
no,
no,
no, no,
it's like a travel trip around the UK. Before that, he worked with a local association with the visually impaired, Open Sight, as an eye clinic liaison officer in the Southampton General Hospital, an advocacy and information officer, awareness training officer, leisure activities officer, and branch network administrator. Tom is also a trained counsellor, and he's been a guide dog owner since 1990. Otis Lloyd Brunel, who won the Outstanding Work 2012 Guide Dog Award, and since December 2017, Toby, who's here with us today. Tom has been a volunteer trustee for Southampton Sight since February 1994, and a volunteer trustee for the Hanson Isle White Educational Trust since 2005. And he was also a district team representative for the Southampton Team for Guide Dogs for 8 years. He's currently a speaker and fundraiser for Guide Dogs and Southampton Sight. There's a couple of things he's done. In addition to that, he's managed to climb Sydney Harbour Bridge, he's run the London Marathon twice, He's cycled on a tandem around the New Forest, hopefully on the back, not the front.
On the back, yeah.
He's walked the West Highland Way in Scotland. He's abseiled off the Spinnaker Tower in Portsmouth. He's climbed the highest mountain in Australia. I'm not even going to try and pronounce that one. And he's ridden the fastest, longest, and highest zip wire in the world.
Oh,
I'm exhausted now, just reading.
Sometimes
so, ladies and gentlemen, Tom McAnulty. Thanks
very much for inviting me today. And we're going to talk a little bit about guide dogs today, but I'll just give you a little intro. You've heard that about me. I'm originally from a little place called Clydebank near Glasgow. Has anybody ever heard of it?
No,
they used to build ships there, didn't they? Yeah, and they had Singer sewing machine factory there. And so when you left school, you went to one or the other. I went to neither. I ran away to sea. Well, I didn't run away. My mother packed my bags and sent me off. But I joined the Merchant Navy when I was 16, and I worked on the cruise ships. My first trip to sea was round the world. It was just amazing, really. In 69, I joined it in London, went to South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Panama Canal. Somebody said recently, I'm glad you weren't a deckhand because you got it the wrong way around. I just remember the places I went to Tahiti. I didn't remember what order they came in, I was in catering. There was more ships available here in Southampton, and that's what brought me down south. So in 71, I moved all my paperwork down here because there was a lot more variety. I joined the Canberra, I went on there for a year. I used to go down to the British Shipping Federation, and it was like a job centre, and up on the board it would say Canberra for so many cruises to Rio de Janeiro or something, or fly out to Japan to join another ship, or fly to Fiji to join a ship. So you'd say, yeah, I'll take that, and off you'd go. And it was a very carefree lifestyle I had. But then when I was 31, I went ashore in Trinidad, and I woke up next day and I couldn't see. And that's when I lost my sight. It was cyanide poison that affected my optic nerve. And it's very rare. And there's cyanide in food, tobacco, and alcohol. And it wasn't as if I'd been out for a three-course meal, like had a bottle of wine and a packet of fags. They never did exactly identify where it came from. But I think no matter how old you are, or how much sight you lose, we all need time to adapt. And that's when we need support, and it's really important that the support out there. And I was very fortunate; I got that from Southampton Sight, Open Sight, and social service as well. But I did struggle with it at the beginning, and I drank too much. I tried to learn Braille, and I was flattening the dots because I was angry and I wasn't, that was acceptance. So gradually I did different things, and then I went off to, there was a place in Torquay, a big manor house, and that's where you went when you, if you were working age, for rehab and also for, you know, to assess you for work. This manor house was on top of a cliff, and you send all the blind down there. And I'm sure social services sent them down there to get the numbers down. Like, you know. But when I arrived here, they said, you've got to be in for 10 o'clock at night. I thought, God, I'm used to going out at 10 o'clock at night, coming in with the milkman. I mean, a good night out in Bourbon Street in the piano bar, like, you know, used to come in and then go straight to work. So I was rebelling there as well. I was going clubbing it and coming up fire escape windows, God knows what else. Like, you know, not the best thing for a blind person to be doing at 2:30 in the morning. But then I came back, and then I had a couple of years, and I got my act together, and I know where I'm going now. So I went back to Torquay, and I was a model student and everything. I was typing away, as touch typing, learning Braille, doing all the things, and I went off to college up, excuse me, the RMIB had a college in Loughborough, so I went up there for a couple of years, and then 30 years ago this year, because Open Sight are celebrating their centenary this year, their 100 years, and when they were celebrating the 70th, I was the first blind person ever to be employed by the charity, and that was in 1992, and I started there, and like you say, I was a receptionist to start with, looking after. I took the children away on holiday, the adults away on holiday, visually impaired. And we used to do all the active things like canoeing, ice skating, had to get all the kids on the ice, and it was just great fun. And the kids then went back home and said, yes, I can do all these different things. So that was the career there, and as Keith just read out, I did advocacy, making sure people got the benefits, because it's really important that visually impaired people know what they're entitled to. So I used to do that. And then I was in the hospital for 3 years, and didn't do any cataract operations when I was in there, like, you know. And I could pick up the pieces from the consultants. You know, I could look at the practical side, see how people are getting on at home. You know, just simple things like putting the toothpaste on the brush. You know, you just get the tube of toothpaste, put it on your tongue, and bring the brush over, and no mess. You know, just sort of things like that you get frustrated with in the early days. And then I'd look at the emotional side, because I'm a trained counsellor, so I could spend time, because as we all know, sight loss is a bereavement and a loss. And then, you know, and then as I say, I could look at the finances and make sure they're getting benefits, etc. And then for the last 12 years, I was running groups for the Macular Society. And when it says those counties, they actually, when I first started, I covered the bottom half of the United Kingdom. And a colleague, he did Scotland, Northern Ireland, North of England. And he says to me, after 6 months, he says, Tom, I'm out of here, it's too much. So for 5 months, I had the whole of the United Kingdom. So 1 minute I'm up in the Isle of Skye, then I'm over in Norfolk, Suffolk, then Cornwall, Newcastle. I mean, I got to know the UK very well in that job. And yeah, I retired because I was, you know, 68, and I thought I've done my bit. So I left 18 months ago. So a little bit about my dogs. I'm on number four. Toby, some of you remember Brunel, I'm sure.
Yes.
He was in dipping, robbing handbags and things like that. We like to call it fundraising. So all four of my dogs are so different. My first dog, as you said there, was Otis. And I think I loved Otis before I even got him. And I got him in 1990. And I'd done the first year up in Loughborough, using my long cane, and getting around, getting entangled in bicycles and God knows what else. And then guide dogs had promised if I go to college, and in between the academic year, they would give me a dog. And they kept their word. And off I went up to Wokingham and trained for a month up there with Otis. And then when we went back up to Loughborough, it was amazing. Bicycles disappeared out of my life because it just sat me around everything. And I remember walking down the road, and the snow was quite deep, and the snow was coming down, and I could go out and about again. I just felt freedom. I thought, I'm back, I'm living again, this is fantastic. I can do whatever I like now. And off we went. So I had them. And even when I was sitting exams, I'd be on the computer, and you know, I was really tense and everything, and he would be under there, he'd be so quiet, just waiting. And as soon as I finished the exam, he picked up the lead and swung it around as if a sigh of relief was in him as well. And he used to follow me everywhere. When I worked for Open Sight in the head office in Bishopstoke, I'd go into another office and he'd follow me in there. He needed to be near me. And that was his nature. Anyway, when he was a living, he retired. And I was keeping the old dog. And then I got the new one, Lloyd. Lloyd couldn't care less what room I was in. Like, you know, his contract finished as soon as we were in the front door. Like, you know. And they get it out, check, you know, I'm looking after you when we're out and about, but indoors, no, it's not happening. Washing, no, forget it, ironing, all this stuff. And if you've had pets yourself, you know they're all different. This was not another Otis. Lloyd had arrived, let you know. And he done an equally as good a job. So basically what the dogs are doing, they're working from curb to curb, avoiding any obstacle on the way. And then they sit at the curb or stand. Some of them take too long to sit, so we just let them stand. And because people think they can see the green man and all that. I says, no, it's not. I'm under there. The, you know, the pelican crossing with a little cone underneath it. Do you know about that?
No.
Traffic lights.
Yeah. Under the traffic lights and the pelican crossing, if you press the button, under the box there's a little cone shape. And when it rotates, that's when the green man comes up. And that's there for us as visually impaired people. Yeah, but that's what's there for visual people, so you can go under there, and I prefer it because sometimes the bleep doesn't go because you might be built up area or for whatever reason, but I actually prefer it. And I remember 3 years ago when I was last up in Scotland, and I was going along Gyle Street, and I'm saying to Toby, good boy, find the crossing, and he was a bit animated, I thought, what's going on here? And I put my hand down, and lo and behold, there was a little hand under there already. This lady was there with her guide dog. So the dog is trained to go there, so I would either tell him to go forward, left, or right. He knows all those different commands. And then when we go to Portswood, I live in Bittern Park, when we get to Portswood, and I'm on one side of the shop, I can say, good boy, find the pound shop, or good boy, find Boots, or, you know, the post office. Any of the shops that's down that side, he'll find for me. And he only has to go once, and we give him a treat, and he'll remember that. And then we go over the other side, good boy, find Superdrug, find this, find that, and he'll find it for me. And it just takes all the, you know, the pressure out. And if I want to go for the bus, I say, good boy, let's find the bus stop, and he'll find the bus stop for me. And he waits there, and then when the bus comes, he takes me on, and we go to the bit with the disabled arm. And it's the same when the train comes in, he watches for the door opening and he's straight in there and he takes me to the seats for the disabled. They're just fantastic. And they enjoy what they do. They don't get told off. It's positive reinforcement. So they either get praise verbally, physically, or a treat. A couple of treats in both pockets. But even when I went to the loo there and I said, good boy, find the seat, he came straight back and found the seat because he knew we were sitting there. And he'd been to the loo once and he knows where it is. So he only has to do something once. And he's well travelled. All my dogs are well travelled. Toby's been to Florida. Something we didn't put on, he didn't put on there. We went swimming with the dolphins 4 years ago. And that was on my bucket list.
Pardon? Toby didn't.
No, Toby didn't. But that was on my bucket list to go swimming with the dolphins. So we did some research in Discovery Cove in Orlando. Has anybody been there? Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. And so I wanted to go, so yeah. And what I did, because I went to visit the Macula Group in Guernsey, I got him in December. In the February, we did a little 40-minute flight over to Guernsey. I thought, yeah, he's fine on the plane. Let's go to Florida. 9 hours, let you know. And so yeah, he was fine after he'd done all his selfies with the stewardesses. He just went to sleep. So yes, we went over there and I swam with the dolphins and it was absolutely amazing. I held on to the top on the side and we swam across the bay. And you don't have to see to be able to enjoy that. And probably still with somebody holding on to you. I said, no, it was just me and the dolphin. And it was just so beautiful. And I could feel the dolphin's body. And we got familiar before because the dolphin came along and you get to meet it and all the rest of it. And then the second was myself and Paul, we raced across the bay with the dolphin each. So you were almost belly to belly. And then we raised the cross. I won, so it's quite nice. And then the last swim with him was one I'd heard about where you lie flat in the water and two dolphins come up behind you and nose the sole of your feet and push you out. And it was just absolute, and as I say in America, it was awesome. And it was just fantastic. It was just a great feeling. So we had those three different swims. So yeah, so the dogs are well travelled and they come into the cabin with us on the aeroplane and they keep a seat free so there's plenty of room on the floor for them. And even your cheap airline, who have gone to the Canaries from, you know, in Ryanair from Bournemouth, they keep a seat free as well. The airlines are wonderful with us, really. So so then going back to Lloyd, so he was number two, very laid back, loved the world and all the rest of it. And Otis, he enjoyed retirement and then sadly he passed away at 12 and a half. So he had 18 months, the two of them together. And then we carried on, Lloyd and I. And then he took early retirement, he took a pension plan, me, and he was 9 and a half, but he was a bit arthritic. And so then we got Brunel, and which some of you have met Brunel, and he was a cheeky one, and he arrived. And I was still working in the hospital, I was only there for a couple of months before we went to the Macular Society. And I let him off once, because I used to let Lloyd off in the hospital, he'd just lie there, and I would come over and make a fuss of him. I let Brunel off, he was right in there, like, you know, into the waiting room, rummaging through their handbags, and I'm like, oh my God, what have they given me? And, but when we moved jobs and I had to travel all over the UK, Brunel was fantastic. It didn't matter if the alarm went off at 4:30 in the morning, and we didn't come into midnight or whatever, he was up for all of it. And we'd go through London on the tube, and he would take me out, as soon as we got out of Waterloo, the barrier, he would take me down to the tube. I would either tell him to left, he knew to go down there. If I told him to right, we'd go for the Jubilee line. If I told him to go forward, he'd find the taxi rank. And we'd go down, he'd find the barrier down at the tube, and then one of the members of staff would come and take us down, put us on the tube, get the walkie-talkie out, tell the people wherever we were going, and there was somebody to meet us when we come off the tube. The underground were fantastic with us. Then we'd go back up and off we'd go and find somewhere else and, you know, get another train and away we'd go. And I couldn't have asked for a better dog, Brunel, and that's why he won his award in 2012. No other dog had ever travelled as much as he had. He was just amazing. And and I had Lloyd until he was 15 and a half. So he had 6 years of retirement. So Brunel and Lloyd were together for 6 years. And in fact, I was going through, I was in Debenhams once, and I was walking through with Brunel, and somebody said, does your dog always carry those fluffy slippers around with him? Like, oh, God. And I thought, for goodness sake, son, size 12 and not so fluffy, like, you know, he's a great fit. And but he could get something off the shelf without me even feeling it. And so that was my boy, and he was just amazing. But there were some other beautiful sides of him as well. I remember we went to one of the groups and the chap was 100, George, and we went to it there and Toby sat next to him, and George, for 95 years, had a dog. And for obviously the last 5 years he couldn't because, you know, of his health and what have you. And he just sat, Brunel sat with him for a good 45 minutes there, and the chap just caressed him. It was so beautiful. And in fact, the press came and they said, oh, do you mind just moving over to get a picture with George? And I went to take Brunel with me. He said, no, leave his dog, it's well, actually his man, you know. So I was cut out the picture, like, you know, and Brunel sitting there with the chap. And again, we went to a volunteer, and her husband had passed away. She ran one of the groups for us. We went to the funeral, and again, Brunel went over and sat with her. And it's sometimes it's amazing that they seem to pick up on things like that. They're just beautiful. And so Brunel went on to, he was nearly 12. Because normally they retire between 10 and 11. And but yeah, he was nearly 12. Then we got Toby. And Toby just loves the world. And the world just loves Toby. We don't want no drama anymore. We just want tranquility. And he's gone to sleep, yeah. As long as he's the only one who's gone to sleep. He's like, oh, yawn, where are we now? Oh, just dog three. And so, yeah, he's very chilled. And again, he's lovely wherever we go. He's beautiful with children. And we do a lot more now for guide dogs since we retired, volunteering. So we go to schools and cubs and beavers and things like that. And it's really nice. Toby can spend time with children, especially children who are nervous of dogs. And they, by the end of the night, they're over there cuddling them and everything else. And so it's so lovely. So all four of my dogs, they seem to have come at the right time because Otis was serious. And I was serious at the time. I was rebuilding my life. I was studying. And then I got Lloyd and I thought, I can be a little bit more laid back now. And then when I got Brunel, he was a cheeky one. So when I used to run the groups, I used to get a bit cheeky with the people and then have some fun with them. And then Toby, we don't want, as I say, drama. We just want to enjoy and just relax. And so the four dogs, all different. They've all looked the same. And they've all been cross lab retrievers. And I'm sure people see me walking up and down the road, thinking, God, that dog's doing well. He's had a couple of years, you know. And so, I've been very fortunate with the four dogs, and getting to know them is fun as well. But oh God, it doesn't get any easier when you lose them. And even Toby missed Brunel as much as we did. Like, you know, he was looking for him when we come in, and they're just good friends. And I'm very fortunate I can keep the retired dogs. In fact, I moved house to the dog retirement home, it is now mine. And I used to live in St Denis, but I was always going over Copton Bridge to Riverside Park. So now I live there, and it's lovely for the dogs as well. And it's not all work. They have free time as well. And when they go into the park, he has a little bell on his collar, and away he goes. And I just use my white stick. And then he just does what other dogs do, chasing dogs, being chased, going to the river, and doing what they do, and just having fun. Mm. So it's not all work, but they enjoy the work. As soon as you pick the harness up, they go, oh God, where are we going? Because they don't see it as work, they just see it as being with you and pleasing you. And so that's a little bit about guide dogs. Any questions on the dogs? Yeah, and they're usually about 18 months, 20 months when we get them. It takes that long to train them. But the people I take my hat off to is the people, the puppy raisers. Those are the people that have them from 8 weeks old to 12, 14 months old. And I mean, they just go over the nappy changing stages, chewing the furniture, and they hand them back and then get another one. I think they're amazing volunteers that do that. They're really incredible.
Paul, you had a question?
Yes, thank you. I'm going to share a memory from when I was a student in London.
Uh-huh.
And I was at Charing Cross Station, and a train came in on the opposite platform. There's a slam door stuck.
Oh, yeah.
And the slam door opened on the opposite side to the platform, and there appeared a man and a dog. And I shouted, but I was so mesmerised by this because the dog was holding back the gentleman. And, a lasting impression which you reminded me. So,
If there's something in danger there, they won't take the command. If I tell him to cross the road and I haven't heard a cyclist coming along, he won't. That's where he'll disobey my command, because he's protected, because he's seen that coming along.
Well, the e-scooters nowadays.
Or e-scooters as well.
But
like you say, with the open door and if there was no platform there, the dog would have looked after him. And you become one when you're out.
Yeah.
You look after each other. And then as soon as you go into the shop, they take it to the checkout or whatever, and then the staff take over from there. They're just incredible. You just get into each other's hands. And sometimes I used to go back to groups I hadn't seen for a year, 18 months, because a lot of the venues were near public transport, because it had to be for visually impaired people going to the groups. Mm. And he'd remember, as soon as you get out of the station, it would way off. You know, it's just me. I thought, God, I can't even remember where we're going. Like, he knows where he's going. A lot of them defined by smell. And the memories I've got on them, it's just incredible.
They're inbuilt sat now, didn't they?
Oh, without a doubt. In fact, we did that when we did a run. Oh, did we mention that run? And we at the Olympic Park, the Olympic Stadium, and we had my running buddy. She came along with us, and Paul came along as well to look after Brunel. And when we got to the barrier, I said, good boy, find right. And he was heading for the Jubilee line, and my running partner and Paul nipped in behind.
We were following them.
They were following, leading the way, like, you know. And because he knew how to go to the lift and then down and get across to the Jubilee line. And I've been very, very lucky with all four. for dogs over the last 32 years. And as I say, they enjoy it as well. So,
Tom, thank you very much indeed for that.